comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here, and I appreciate that. I'm here because you have a right to know, and because you matter. Well, we have some interesting news, kind of an update, a teaser a little bit, I guess, out of the Baltic Sea region. As you know, Mr. Lundberg and his team are who discovered this very strange anomaly on the floor of the Baltic Sea. And we've been looking at and discussing the sonar images of that for quite some time now. Well, today the divers on his team went down to take a look at it. And he posted an update on his site at 2 p.m. their time. And I think it was 2 p.m. their time. I believe that's correct. But what he said is the divers are down, and they are taking a look at this object. And word from the ship is they are amazed at what they have found. But we don't get to find out what they found until next week. They'll post pictures and more details on Mr. Lundberg's website next week. So we have to wait till then. Until then, we just have to imagine, I guess. But that's a quote from his website, that they are amazed at what they have found. And so I'm looking forward to being amazed as well as we get to look at it next week. And I think it's going to be pretty exciting to get to see those photographs from the floor of the Baltic Sea and get to see what is the thing in that image. Let me remind you, if you have not yet subscribed to the K-Files, our free weekly newsletter, and let me inform you, if you've never heard of it because you're brand new to the show, the K-Files is our free weekly newsletter. I've been publishing that now since 2000. It comes out every week. Used to come out once a month. Now it comes out every week, has for many years now come out every week. And it's absolutely free. We'd love for you to be getting it. And there's no genius in not getting it, because if you're not getting the K-Files, you are in the dark. And it's free, so there's no reason for you not to do it. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, but most people don't. Most people stay with us forever. We still have subscribers with us that started back in 2000, so it must be pretty good. Go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and right in the middle of your screen, you'll see the link. It says K-Files. Just click that and subscribe, and then you'll get an email with a link in it that you have to click in order to activate your subscription, so be sure you do that. Also, if you're brand new to the Kevin Smith Show, you need to understand it's always free to listen. But we have a members community. Now, the reason for the members community is we do not have advertising on this show. Therefore, we do not have advertising income. The members community is how we support the show. This is how we pay the bills. It's $7.50 a month. That's only 25 cents a day, and you get tons and tons of stuff for that. Check it out. Join tonight. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight we are going to I am going to take NASA on an issue. I know that shocks you. I know you think, oh my goodness, he's never done that. Right? Now, let me say to those who are at NASA monitoring this, because we know you're there and we know you're online and you're watching and listening, you know that I commend you when you do something that I think is right on target. And when you do something that's boneheaded, I say so. And tonight, you're in the bonehead category. All of you have heard of Planet X. All of you have heard of, some people call it Nibiru. Now, Planet X is not actually Planet X. That's the Roman numeral 10. Okay, but for shorthand, we say Planet X, but it's really the 10th planet. That's back when we had 9 planets, but of course, the scientists, the astronomers of the world have divorced Pluto now, and they say it's not a planet. So, you know, I think it is, and I still consider it a planet. But anyway, when we had 9 planets recognized in our solar system, then Planet X is Planet 10. And it's very, very interesting about Planet X and Nibiru, because, first of all, we know about Nibiru from Zechariah Sitchin and his writings. There are other ancient writings that talk about this planet, but nobody ever brought them out to the public and made them made the public well aware like Zechariah Sitchin did. And before we get into this, I want to make sure that you understand. Long-time listeners do understand already, but I want to make sure everybody understands. I don't believe in Planet X. Now, because you've been trained to not think, some of you are saying, "Oh, well, he disbelieves Planet X." No, that's not the same. Disbelief is an active belief in the negative. I neither believe nor do I disbelieve. I either know or I don't know. It's that simple. And so I have said about Planet X, I don't know. I haven't seen it. I don't know. And that's where we're coming from here. However, if you're a long-time listener of the Kevin Smith Show, you also know that where there's a black hole in information, it draws me like a magnet. And where I see smoke, where I see someone trying to obfuscate and to keep us from seeing what's there, that draws my attention. Well, that's what we have here. What we have here, and I'm going to introduce our guest in just a moment, but I want to set this up so you understand exactly where I'm coming from. What we have here is NASA doing some weird stuff that amounts to smoke. Now, where there is smoke, there is fire. So if NASA is generating smoke, there must be something to what's being said. On NASA's website, they have a section where you can ask an astrobiologist, okay? And when you go to that and you search for Nibiru, there are several things you're going to find. One thing, I don't have it on the screen for those who are watching, but one thing, in the article from which this graphic comes from, and I'll read it so those who are listening can get the benefit of it. In that article, it's real long, and it's numbered. So, you know, there's certain features about Nibiru. So you have number one. It's like an FAQ. Number one, what about this? And then the astrobiologist answers and so forth. In this article, he says several times that Nibiru is fiction and it comes from a cult. It's fiction generated by a cult. So NASA guys, listen carefully. All right, here you go. This is your first kick in the rear. The word cult means a group with hidden information, secret information. Zechariah Sitchin, whether I believe or don't believe, and that's me, I just don't know, whether I believe or don't believe is irrelevant. Zechariah Sitchin was public with what he said. He did not hide what he said. Now, a group with secret information, let's see, that would be NASA. So you guys at NASA are the cult, but you're trying to put it off on someone else. Okay, now, here's what is said at this page. Very interesting. Now, my guest this evening is an amateur astronomer. He's also an engineer and inventor, but he's an amateur astronomer, and that's where we're going to be talking tonight, about his work with amateur astronomy. When amateur astronomers find something that makes NASA nervous, they say, well, yeah, but, you know, he's an amateur astronomer. Trained astronomers have noted this and this and this. But when they are in trouble and they need to appeal to the amateur astronomers, then they use the amateur astronomers as proof that they, NASA, are right. And here's the statement. The statement is, there are more than 100,000 amateur astronomers from all over the world. They are constantly watching the sky, and not one of them has reported seeing Nibiru or any other rogue object. I can see my guest is chuckling now. Ladies and gentlemen, NASA's out of their freaking mind. Now, they are out of their freaking mind because they are putting this out as an answer against the presence of Nibiru, and they're claiming that astronomers, amateur astronomers, all over the world, 100,000 of them, constantly watching the sky, have never reported seeing Nibiru, which is not true, they have, and or any other rogue object. Not anybody that I know of that talks about Nibiru has called it a rogue object. They have said it's a planet in our solar system. This is NASA doublespeak. They are in the disinfo business here, and NASA knows for sure that no one has claimed that Nibiru is any type of rogue object. So Nibiru, Planet X, they spend a great deal of time on this page poo-pooing it, but on your screen now is going to appear a very interesting thing also on NASA's website, and it is NASA announcing they have found the 10th planet. Now, if you want to go to that page and see it for yourself, you may do so. If you're listening to the show, you go to my website. Scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right under it, it says Show Info. That's a link. Click it. The page that pops open has a link in it that will take you right to this NASA page. This is NASA's page where they say they found the 10th planet. Now, it was photographed. This is interesting, and file this away in your memory bank. It was photographed in 2003. But they didn't find it in the photograph till 2005. Now, here's what they say. They say that this is a planet that's at least as big as Pluto. Now, again, a lot of people will say, oh, well, it's about the size of Pluto. That isn't what they said. They said it's at least as big. That means it could be much larger. But it's three times farther away from the sun than Pluto. And it's very cold. Three times further away. Now, is this Nibiru? I'm not saying that it is. I'm not even suggesting it is. But what I'm saying is that NASA tries to put up this smokescreen on one page and say that amateur astronomers all over the world, they've never reported finding, seeing Nibiru or any other rogue object. And they spend the whole page, that's a very long article, and they spend that whole page trying to tell you that this 10th planet, this Nibiru thing, is all Sumerian mythology and it's all promoted by a cult. NASA's the cult. They're the ones with the hidden secret information. The only person that has talked about Nibiru, the original person talking about Nibiru was Zachariah Sitchin. And he didn't do it in secret. He put it right out in public. That is not a cult. NASA, caught with your pants down once again. Oh my. My guest this evening is Conrad Zydervelt. He is one of those more than 100,000 amateur astronomers. And sometimes NASA says, yeah, but you know, he's not a trained astronomer. And then other times, like what we just saw, NASA's in trouble, and so NASA says, oh, well, you know, all these amateur astronomers, they haven't seen anything. Yeah, well, his name is Conrad Zydervelt. He's one of them. Conrad, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. Nice to be here.
Sorry for taking so much time with all of that introduction, but I think it's important for people to know what's going on, and you know, that's about the only way to do it is to show what NASA's been up to with this. You are an engineer, you are an inventor, and you are also an amateur astronomer, and you've been spying the skies as an amateur astronomer for some time. Back in 2003, interestingly, the same time when NASA photographed this object, you also saw a strange object and you photographed it. Tell us about that.
Well, I was in Hawaii at the time, and a big part of astronomy, especially amateur astronomy, is to find a spot that doesn't have a lot of street lights and light pollution. And if you can find a dark spot like that, you can get a pretty good view of what you're trying to look at. So I found on the second or third turnout going up to a mountain on Kauai Island, it goes up to a spot called Kokei where there's a national park, and there's no streetlights going up, and it's kind of shielded by from the other side of the island, which has most of the lights anyway. And so I set up an 8-inch telescope and was able to see over several nights this object coming in, and it was quite interesting because the object was, I know the word I'd use maybe is ephemeral, because if you look directly at it, it's very difficult to see. It just is sort of like a little reddish glow. But if you look to one side, the side of your eye is much more attuned to red light or infrared light. So you could see it. And then about the second night, there was a white light that was moving with it. So I was able to identify the red, what they call a persona, or the red view of it and the white view. And red light bends a little bit as it goes through the air, the atmosphere. So you actually got like two views of the same object moving across the sky as a planet would move. Mars, for instance, is usually, you can see it with the naked eye, and it's red. And if you look at it in a telescope, you'll see that as Mars moves, it moves across the star field, and back it tends to stay in the same spot compared to a planet, which moves across the sky at a much faster rate. So you could tell it was a planet. And how I knew where to look was on the internet. There was coordinates being posted, both declination and radian. That's how high and what angle to look to find this object that other amateur astronomers around the world were seeing. And there was photographs of it being posted by this viewing team, which I, being a very curious person, joined right away, got the information, and then by using a program called SkyMap, you can print on your computer a section of the sky, and it'll show you the major stars at those coordinates. So then you simply matter of lining the telescope up through sort of a trial and error until you can actually zone in on the exact spot where they say this object was, and then I could see it. Now, the image I sent in was not in the astronomy format. It was just a black and white photograph, and of course that was a matter of trying to get my digital camera hooked up to this 8-inch telescope, which really wasn't set up for a camera. But the images I took matched the images that were actually posted, where people had a little larger telescopes. And at that time, the distance was quite great. It was way on the far side of Pluto, much farther out. But it was just in the process, as we saw the next year, of it accelerating in, because the closer it comes in, the more it's attracted by our sun. Our sun is a big gravitational giant in our solar system. And this planet was accelerating to a very high speed as it came in over the next months. So that's kind of the story of how I saw the planet while it was still in the night sky. It eventually crossed over, passing the Earth, into what we call the daytime sky, which means it gets to where you could only see it in the daytime, and then the daytime sky, it's too bright, until it passed and went around the sun, and then came along, from our point of view in North America, on, I would say, call it the 5 o'clock position, if you looked at the sun being the face of a clock. And it started showing up almost every day on one or the others of the SOHO NASA satellites. And of course, when I called NASA during a online briefing and asked them what I was seeing, they told me it was compression artifacts. So that would be like white noise would be if you're not quite on the right TV station, you're sort of in between that snow that you get.
I'm surprised they didn't tell you it was a Chinese wedding candle.
Well, the way they told me, that's about what I felt like. They're very good I think the reason that no amateur astronomer is ever called in is because they either hang up on you, or they tell you you're an idiot, or they say you're an amateur and you don't know what you're looking at, and they thank you for your call, and that's about as far as you get.
Mm-hmm. Well, I find it very interesting. You know, NASA plays both sides of the fence with amateur astronomy. Either they're untrained, or they call them as witnesses to show that, by golly, these guys don't see it. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back.
Listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Conrad Zydervelt. And he is one of those amateur astronomers that NASA talks about, and sometimes they poo-poo the amateur astronomer's findings, and then when their back is against the wall, what do they turn to? You'll find this very interesting. I'll bring Conrad back on in just a minute, but I got to tell you this. You'll get a kick out of this. You go and read that Ask an Astrobiologist and about Nibiru, and these guys, whoever wrote that, is scrambling, absolutely scrambling. And makes unsubstantiated, wild statements like all that information about Nibiru comes from a cult. Well, I happen to be an expert, truly an expert on cults. So NASA, you tell me which cult. You're the cult. You're the one with the secret information. But they do that, and they call as witness a theologian, and they say, well, he says that Zachariah Sitchin is wrong. Yeah, well, okay, Zachariah Sitchin says he's wrong. So what? That what kind of information? Some person says A is wrong, and the other one says no, B is wrong. So what kind of evidence is that? And then with their backs against the wall, these amateur astronomers that they poo-poo, they call them as witness, and then lie about it, and say these guys, they've never seen Nibiru. Well, you know, here with us in this show tonight, I am proving to you absolutely conclusively that's not true. Here's one of those amateur astronomers, and he says he has seen it. Now, Conrad, let me ask you a question. In 2003, you saw this planet. It was not one of the nine that we know of. You noticed that it is a planet. You saw it through your telescope. How do you know that is Planet X or Nibiru?
Well, it's a matter of putting a bunch of different sources together. First thing I would say of Sitchin is he was a giant in his field, and I have the utmost respect for his body of work. And it's from the Sumerian source, it's the largest overview. And he wrote about 12 different books that I've seen, and he did an excellent job of the Sumerian source of information. But there's a Chinese source, there's a source out of India in the Vedas, there's even an oral tradition in the western United States from the Nez Perce Indians.
Mm-hmm.
They said that during the last shift, the land got so hot it was burning their moccasins, so they jumped into the rivers only to find that the rivers were boiling. So that was their oral tradition about the Pacific Plate, which subducts under the northwest United States land mass as the Pacific shortens when the planet X actually passes through our solar system. It causes a lot of compression of the crust of the Earth. The Pacific always shortens and the Atlantic always stretches. That's the idea of at one time Pangaea, all the continents were together. Every time this planet comes past, and it's come past probably 250, 300 times every 3,600 years is what the ancients said of its orbital period. And when it does, the Atlantic stretches out and the continents spread out more. And, of course, the ocean sloshes, so this is when coastal cities get, or coastal areas in earlier times got pretty well beat up from the pole shift. Some pole shifts are much stronger than others, depending how close it passes to the Earth.
Okay, so from a number of sources, including ancient texts, you determined that what you were looking at through your telescope was Nibiru, right?
Correct, and I first saw it and started skywatching, specifically looking at the coordinates, in about November 2002. So there's been about 10 years to gain information from astronomy sources as well as satellite daily photographs.
Let me interrupt for just a moment. I apologize for that, but I want to make sure I understand. Maybe I misunderstood. You just said that you've been looking at this or paying attention to it since 2002?
Correct.
But you didn't see it till 2003, is that right?
No, when I first saw it, it was in November in 2002, and that's when it looked like a fuzzy, almost like a ball of cotton.
Yeah, I misunderstood then.
Yeah, and in 2003, it was a lot closer than it was in 2002. And actually, there were several photographs posted that were taken by observatory, one in France, Notre-Dame Observatory. Posted pictures that they took, and they enhanced the pictures, and you could actually see the dust cloud in all its glory. So the reason it looked fuzzy were when we see Mars or Venus in the morning or evening sky, it's a point. It looks like a bright light, like somebody had a light bulb out there and you were seeing that glow. But Planet X drags with it because it comes through the asteroid belt. It picks up a lot of gravel, little pieces of rocks, boulders, and iron oxide. There's a lot of iron oxide from asteroids that have gotten beat up in the past. And it being a very magnetic planet, it drags that stuff with it. And when you look at it, what you're seeing is the gravel around it. You're not actually seeing the surface of the planet. And then as you look at it, you notice it has a large number of moons. It has 20 submoons. My guess is about 23 moons. And it drags those with it in two helical spirals. Because when a planet is slowly going around its sun, its satellites, say our moon, tend to go around its center. But if you were to accelerate the Earth somehow in a certain direction, the moon would still circle, but it would be trailing the Earth. So since this is a large body that's on a very long orbit that moves, as it moves into our solar system, those moons are always trailing out behind it, but in two separate helix or corkscrew. So you see those, and then now what we're looking at, where we can see it naked eye during sunrise or sunset, if you look through a red filter, or a welder's lens. This is a welder's lens here. But welder's lenses are green, where if you take the center of a floppy disk, the old-fashioned floppy disk they used to use, and you rip it apart and take that center out of there, it's brown looking. When you hold it to the light, it's red. So it gives you a safe way to look at the sun, and the planet is very red, and also the moon swirls, those moons that are behind it. Light will travel from the sun down the center of the swirl, and it's almost like a little magnifying glass. And so a lot of what you see is those moon swirls. Other times you can see the actual core of the planet itself.
All right, so you made a statement when you and I talked on the telephone that I said, okay, you have seen it. Can it be seen with the naked eye? And by that, I mean, obviously, you have to have some kind of filter because the sun will burn your eyes up otherwise. But
exactly.
I mean, by naked eye, I mean, without binoculars, without a telescope, can you see it?
Yes, you can. Absolutely. And it's showing up if you just do a Google or go to YouTube and do a search for second sun. Mm-hmm. It shows up like a second sun most evenings at sunset.
One of the objections that gets brought up, and I'll let you answer this, is that when people are showing you these second suns, these are really what they call sun dogs, which is an optical illusion. Now, sun dogs really do exist, and it's basically a reflection of the sun within the camera lens itself. And so you have these sun dogs.
You do, and you also have what they call flares.
Yeah, lens flares.
Which is another phenomena. And if you're looking through several pieces of glass, like a double two window panes, you can see two sets of these flares. But what draws the difference is as you move your camera back and forth, if you're looking through a digital camera to where you can see in the back window what you're going to photograph if you push the button, as you move that around, the one that moves with the sun is a true image. Another way to check is if there's something in front of it, like a tree, a telephone wire, and a flare will always be in front of the telephone wire, telephone pole, or the tree, but a true image of something that's actually in the sky, you'll see that image in front of it, and it will move as you move back and forth. It will move with the sun. So that you can very easily, and there's a very detailed explanation on the poleshift.ning.com site of how to tell the difference, and many examples showing it has arrows where it says this is a flare, this is the true image, so you can sort that out. It's not really that big a mystery.
So when we look at these videos, though, on YouTube, how would we be able to tell if that video is showing us a sun dog or a lens flare or a real object? How, when we look at the video, how would we be able to tell?
Okay, because when they have those videos, there's one that's called What NASA's Trying to Hide is a fairly good one, but there's several you'll see on there. And any time they move the camera slowly, they go left. They sort of stay on the sun, but they move it to the left, and then they move it to the right. If the, from North America, you remember the, I said it's at 5 o'clock, and it's still at 5 o'clock. So if you're going to see an image of Planet X, it's going to be at 5 o'clock in North America right now, for at least for the next several months. And as they go right, it will separate slightly from the sun and move out because of the parallax of how you're viewing it. During the eclipse in 2011, there were several moons, and I think somebody at NASA jokingly said that it was a spaceship, you know, making a joke, but they were large objects looking maybe the size of Jupiter by the sun. Well, they were much closer to the Earth than the sun. Those are actually moons of Planet X, which during the eclipse, the tail of Planet X is magnetically being drawn by the Earth's magnetism, and as it pulls it to the left from the position of Planet X, that's the direction the moons are trailing out, which brings them across to the face of the sun. So during the eclipse, we were able to see 3 to 4 of those moons very clearly, and nobody could explain what it was, why there'd be an Earth-sized object up right by the sun. Well, they were quite a bit closer to the Earth than the sun. They were like 40 million miles from the sun to where these moons were. But they looked big from our perspective, and that was a real good, I think, giveaway or indication that there's something up there. I mean, because you shouldn't be seeing large objects by the sun during an eclipse if you do something up.
We have to step away for a break here in just a second, but let me ask you a yes or no on this, and then we'll get into it more when we come back from break. Do you know other amateur astronomers who have seen Planet X or Nibiru?
Yes, actually I do.
Okay, we'll get into that when we come back. And also, some very startling evidence that arises from the recent transit of Venus. That's pretty interesting stuff. All right, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Conrad Zeiderfeld. He is an amateur astronomer. He is an engineer and inventor, but we're talking about the astronomy stuff tonight. As we went away for break, Conrad, I ask you the question, do you know of other amateur astronomers that have seen Planet X or Nibiru? And you said, actually, yes, you do. Would you say that quite a number of them have seen it, Conrad?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Now, how many would you say you know about?
Well, Steve Vaught, it was the head of the amateur team that collected information from about 100 astronomers, amateur astronomers, during the 2000-2003 time period. And he actually posted DS images. And those images, the format that professional astronomers use.
Okay. Okay, so there's about 100 that said yes to him, that yes, they had seen it?
Yes, and we're also posting pictures through their telescopes.
And I believe on that site that you mentioned to us, you have posted the image you took in 2003 as well, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, now, recently, within the past couple of days, we had an event that only happens every 150 years or so, and that is where we can see the transit of Venus across the sun. And it was a big, big deal, and lots of people around the world were watching it. There were sites that were streaming that live on the internet. There were, I guess, some television stations that were showing that. And something weird happened with Venus. What was that? Tell us about it.
Well, actually, Venus did an S-roll just as it was entering the sun. As it went across the sun, off. Now, as it was being shown by many sites, you would see it in one spot at a time, and it was about a six-hour transit. But there, I emailed you, I don't know if you got a chance to put it up, but if you go to the PoleShift.ning.com site, that video is up there under the Venus transit. It's a major story on the main page.
Okay, just describe for us. Back up from your camera just a little bit. You're too close. We can't see what your hands are doing.
Okay, how's that?
There you go.
As Venus went across, it was moving away from Planet X, moving to the left, as our view from the Earth. And it had a big gravity well in back of it. So as it went across, first of all, it should have gone across on about the same angle as the Earth is tilted, 23 degrees. But instead of that, it went straight across. And if you take a time lapse, which is what's posted up on that site, it actually did a little bounce all the way across. It did a series of bounces just before it got to where it was entering the penumbra of the sun, or the edge of the sun. It did an S-roll, and then as it entered at the correct spot, but as it went across, it went straight across and not on the 23 angle that's been expected for 200 years. Any astronomer could tell you exactly what was expected. It should go through on that 23-degree angle approximately from right to left. Instead of that, it went straight across. And about halfway through the 3 hours in, NASA noticed what was happening, and all of a sudden each of the sites that NASA had control of either panned in close so that you couldn't tell, or they turned the camera 23 degrees so it looked like it was going on the angle. But unfortunately, that turned the sunspot, so that made it really obvious what had happened. And a number of the sites that NASA didn't have anything to do with showed exactly what happened. And then this time lapse was posted up within hours afterwards that showed this S turn as it went in, and then it's bouncing a transit of Mercury or Venus of the sun. It's always straight in its orbit. There's nothing that would change its orbit. It's really not that close to the sun. It's between the Earth and the sun, and so its orbit is as normal. It just happens that the sun is in back of it from our view from the Earth. From another planet, you wouldn't see it as a transit at that time. So the fact that it bounced across was its orbit going forward, yet this tremendous gravity well. My estimate of the size of this planet, 10th planet, Nibiru, compared to the size of Venus, which is smaller than the Earth, is probably 30 to 1. So its gravity is probably 3 or 4 times what the gravity standing on Venus would be if it weren't so hot. So what you got is this jerky motion going across, and there's nothing that would explain that unless there was some really dynamic, strong gravity source close to it and a big particle flow, probably most of which we don't really understand yet as scientists, of all the different ways that these planets were interacting and tugging on one another. So the cat is out of the bag, so to speak, and the entire astronomy community is waiting for the other shoe to drop. My personal opinion is that the cover-up that NASA has perpetrated on the American public or the world public from, say, 1984 until now, not wanting to give away the presence of this body, and recently not wanting to admit that it was in the inner solar system and about to go past the Earth at 14 or 15 million miles, which will cause a pole shift on the Earth and a lot of sloshing of water and I'm sure a big earthquake and who knows what else. Most of South America is crumbling right now because of the force on the crust of the Earth. Most of this weather that we've been having over the several years, these are the same things that even the Bible reported back in the days of the Jewish Exodus. There was the plagues in Egypt, and then the sea parted during the hour of the shift, and there was a verse about the sun stopping in the sky over Ajalon, and it was all that was talking about the pole shift. And finally, after they left, they were very close to Thera, the volcano that went off on the time, which is how I date the Jewish Exodus, as approximately 1645 BC. So if you add that to our present calendar date of 2012, it's the actual period of the 3,600 years is actually about 3,757 years.
And All right, so provided that what you are saying to us tonight about Nibiru is accurate, provided it is not only in our solar system but near our sun now, I know there are people that are going to say, well, you know, why haven't astronomers seen it? And they're talking about professional astronomers. Do you think professional astronomers have seen it? And if so, why aren't they talking about it?
Well, they're not talking about it because they, in order to become a professional astronomer with a job, you have to sign a national security oath. And it says that you have to clear anything that you want to release to the public if it has anything to do with national security. So they're constrained. I personally know of one astronomer who works for JPL, and his father has a news magazine on Kauai, and he is so bound up by his requirements to his job under his security oaths that he won't release the information to his father that he shouldn't be in a coastal area. He should get farther inland.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't bode well of anybody giving us any warning of what we should be watching out for. However, I think the cover-up is about to break. NASA, the way I see what they're doing right now, is they've engaged different people. See, NASA is like an onion skin, the old government thing, you know. There's a lot, the majority of everybody in NASA is doing great science, even though it's a bureaucracy. But there are a few people in the right layer of the onion skin who know very well about this, and who put out this kind of constant fog like you were discussed in during the opening. So NASA now has told a series of things over the last 15 or 20 years which are blatantly not true, which it knows better than, in order to keep panic from ensuing in the public, I guess is the reason, if I have to guess. But now it's going to be visible. By December of this year, it's going to be blatantly visible in the sky.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We will be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this break, so hang in there, okay? And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're delighted you're here. My sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from the first hour. And our best thoughts and prayers go toward you never having to miss a first hour again, we hope. We're talking this evening with one of those people NASA likes to talk about. When amateur astronomers find something that has NASA worried, they say, well, yeah, but, you know, he's an amateur astronomer. But real trained astronomers, professional astronomers, see it this way. But then when their back is against the wall, NASA, on this thing about Nibiru, Planet X, NASA put on one of their web pages this statement. There are more than 100,000 amateur astronomers from all over the world, and they are constantly watching the sky, and not one of them has reported seeing Nibiru or any other rogue object. And I pointed out, NASA is doing doublespeak here. They're doing disinformation here very clearly, because no one has claimed that Nibiru is a rogue object. No one except perhaps somebody paid by NASA. People who talk about Nibiru talk about it being a member of our solar system and that it is a planet and within our solar system. And NASA knows that. They know that no one has ever claimed that Nibiru is any type of a rogue object. So this is doublespeak. But notice, the back is against the wall. People are asking about this Nibiru. And so who do they appeal to? Well, those amateur astronomers. Tonight we have an amateur astronomer with us who has photographed what he says is Nibiru. And that's what we're talking about. Not only has he photographed it, he has said, I've seen it, and you can see it too. And you don't have to have a telescope now. All you have to do is go out there with some sort of filter for your eyes to protect your eyes. Look at the sun and at sunrise or sunset, and you should see Nibiru at about the 5 o'clock position. One question, and then I want to invite our audience to join us. Conrad, you said that there are about 100 astronomers in the group, in this amateur astronomy group, that have reported seeing it. Have they reported this, any of them, to NASA?
Actually, yes. Most of them made the attempt to contact an observatory or a person at an observatory, or try and get use of the telescope of the observatory, or try and get the observatory to look at the same area of sky and give them a feedback on what it was they were seeing. And the results were pretty hilarious of the result of what happened. One observatory had set up staging towards Orion, towards the area of sky that you would want to look, and locked it out on the computer that controls the telescope, and said that they were working in that area, so that area was locked out. Another reported interview was with an astronomer from an observatory who actually ran into the women's bathroom in order to not have to answer questions. So it's you know, it's like they'll lose their job. I mean, it's not, you know, several people did lose their job, and, you know, I'm not very conspiratorial, but I know there was an awful lot of pressure there to make professionals fear for talking to an amateur astronomer. I cut my eye teeth. My first association with was when I was 16. I would ride my racing bicycle 50 miles uphill to get to Palomar Mountain Observatory in San Diego. And I'll tell you, it was a lot easier riding down the mountain than pedaling up. But I got my actually my merit badge as a Boy Scout at the time in astronomy. And, you know, my interest peaked and has never gone south since. So I'm a very curious person, especially about science or anything that has to do with astronomy.
All right. I'm going to open the telephone lines and invite our audience to join the conversation. And ladies and gentlemen, you do that by giving us a telephone call. Now, the telephone number is 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. And if you're in the USA or Canada, that's the way you get to participate in the show, is to call that number. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, we know that international long-distance calls can be expensive, so we have an additional way for you. The telephone number will work, but if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can use this additional means of communicating with us, and that is go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above it, you see a link that says Flash Message. And so if you're not in the USA or Canada, you can do that. Let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi. Hi, Conrad.
Hi. How are you doing, Rusty?
Very good. You mentioned two words together here that I do not know what they are, and that is a compression artifact. What is that?
That was the term that NASA used, and okay. When they, on their satellite photos of the sun, those images are made up of very high quality digital cameras, but every once in a while you see little square notches missing, you know, little white areas in a black background, and that's called compression artifacts. That's the term NASA used. Another term that's fairly similar is white noise, which is what you see if you turn a TV station to a channel where there's no broadcast. You just see all kind of gray on the screen, little pixels coming on and off. So they call that compression artifacts. And the person at the press conference at NASA said that this image that we were seeing every day on the SOHO satellites in the same spot with the same shape, that's a winged globe with moons trailing out behind it in two helical corkscrews, these 23 planets, he said that we were just seeing compression artifacts, which is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Kevin, you mentioned this article that NASA had just put out, and you think maybe they're trying to flush out all the amateur astronomers because they don't know where they're at? In case an astronomer wants to spill the beans, as it were?
No, I don't think so. Now, let me say, they didn't just put this out. This has been out there. But a lot of people are just finding out about it, but it's been out there for a long time. No, I don't think they're trying to flush out amateur astronomers and just see who's going to talk about it, because amateur astronomers have been talking about it. It's all over YouTube. But what's happened is NASA, that's why NASA is having to come up with some kind of smoke, because there is a fire, and they're having to put up a smoke screen. And that's what's behind NASA putting this stuff out on their website, okay? But this is not something they've just done. This has been out there now for a while. And but it's just interesting. And, you know, they say bad things about the amateur astronomers, politically correct in the way they say it, but they poo-poo the amateur astronomer findings. But then when they need amateur astronomers to come to their defense, they make up a story. And the story is that not one of them has ever reported seeing Nibiru. Now, we've just heard from Conrad about this group of amateur astronomers, in which 100 or so have seen it and have reported it and have posted photographs of it. So we know that NASA is doing disinformation here.
Right.
Okay.
I think NASA just got fleshed out. Conrad, help me. Okay, hang on, Rusty.
I'm seeing what's happening now. I just got a news flash here that says KTTV Channel 4 in Hawaii on Oahu just did a story about 7 minutes long reporting that there was a planetary body at 5 o'clock next to the sun that NASA hasn't been reporting on, but amateur astronomers apparently have identified it as Nibiru. And that just, I think what's happened now because of this aberrant transit of Venus across the sun has emboldened people that would have been wanting to speak out and say something, and that's the first major mainstream media television station I've heard of so far, but it's probably just the first one in a series that will be, you know, speaking out on this.
Okay. Rusty, you had something else you wanted to say?
Yeah, I right along that same line, I was going to ask him if he subscribed to the 2012 stuff that's going on, you know, for December 21st or whatever it is.
Well, when they lined up the 2012 date on the Mayan launch count calendar, it was in disarray at the time they tried to line up the calendars. The calendars don't really line up. The actual date, as far as we've been able to tell, is already past the 2012 date. They didn't line it up quite well. But from the Avenberry crop circles, if you can put some stock in that, because it shows the position of December 2012, and it shows all the planets where they will be in that alignment, and that's the only alignment that those planets could take, except for the planet Pluto, which is in an earlier position. And that would be the way you would try and get the idea across, that that's a date, but the date is off because it shows Pluto in an earlier position. But what it also indicates in a teardrop shape, which is usually how you would depict a comet, that the comet will be clearly visible from the Earth in December 2012. So I think that's the real significance of it, is that we'll be heading into this period of, I guess you would say, greater Earth changes as this planet in our solar system passes by the Earth and then heads back out for another 3,600 years.
Alrighty. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And let me say, if we have some other amateur astronomers out there and you would like to call in and discuss this Nibiru thing with Conrad, please do. Conrad, if we could get you to back up away from your camera just a little bit. There we go. Now we're back in focus. I have a flash message here from Mark in New Zealand, and he wants me to ask you, Conrad, what position in the sky would Nibiru be for the southern hemisphere observers? He is at latitude 40.9 degrees south in New Zealand.
Almost positively, it'll be in the 11 o'clock position from Australia. And
so it would be the same for New Zealand?
Yeah, Australia, New Zealand, that sort of Southeast Asia area. I picked that because there's several YouTube videos posted, and if we're arrogant enough to think that we're on top of the Earth, then they're hanging on the bottom. So their view is the other way around. Just like China, you know, they would maybe be straight down from where we are.
Okay.
So it just inverts the image, so.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi. I was wondering, Conrad, so that you believe, I know that you don't have all the computers and stuff, you know, NASA does, but you predicted that actually travels between Mars and that area and the asteroid belt.
Yeah, it comes. This planet revolves around two suns, with the sun that we know, and our sun has a binary. It's a black, huge rock. It's not as big as our sun, and it never lit. And there's no stars in back of it that we would be able to see it. But we've known for a couple hundred years that it's out there because it perturbs the outer planets and causes their orbits to change slightly. And those calculations point that it's in the direction of Orion, and that's where this one planet is called the planet of crossing in the ancient textbooks. And it goes around that sun. It takes 1,800 years to go from our sun. It's a part, both of these are suns are the same solar system. So this is a planet in our solar system. And it goes 1,800 years out, and goes around that sun, which is some 18 times the distance between the sun and Pluto. You take the distance from the sun to Pluto, multiply it by about 18 times, that's where this other sun is. And it goes around that sun, which has been called either Nus, which is the sun backwards, or Nemesis. And NASA said last month that Nemesis exists. So they're starting to leak the truth out because they're trying to play catch-up. But this planet takes 1,800 years to go out and 1,800 years to come back. And as it comes back through, it passes, of course, through the asteroid belt. And when it does, it picks up gravel and junk and trash in its tail. And during the hour of the passage, when it passes at its closest point to the Earth is lashed by its tail, and this gravel falls down through the atmosphere. So that's really why you want to be under a piece of tin or a roof that has a metal, a building that has a metal roof on it. And that gravel falls down, and it probably would do a lot more than sting. Small pieces of gravel fall, and a lot of iron oxide falls. The biblical text says that the rivers all turned red. Well, that's if you take iron oxide and you throw it in a glass of water, it looks like blood. It just turns yucky red. So that's the story on its passage.
Yeah, I was just wondering, because I know they stated that suns have at least one binary, and most of them, have two. I know they launched a satellite a while back. I was just looking at it, and I can't think of the name of it, but it was supposed to have been up there for quite a while, but they burned up its fuel all to look at something. Is this what they were looking at, do you think?
My guess is that they were looking at Planet X. If it's the one I'm thinking of, it's more recent. They sent it in the IRAS satellite up. Actually, it was sent up in a balloon in 1983, and it took an infrared image of Nibiru when it was much closer to the middle between the two points of focus or foci. And what they took at it, they were sensing heat. Infrared, and they got a very good image of it, and they posted it. It was on the front page of the New York Times. It was in the 1984 Encyclopedia Britannica with an explanation of the orbit of this planet. And then after that, I think NASA clammed up because NASA is run by the United States government, and I think somebody in the United States government said, oh my God, this is going to cause a panic. Don't talk about this anymore. And that's how the cover-up started.
Yeah, you talk about just catching a little tail there. You say it's got quite, sounds like, I know you mentioned several moons, bouncing through the, asteroid belt, isn't a good possibility that we're going to get hammered worse than just, a little dust?
Yes, but not by any of the moons. The moons stay within 5 million miles of the planet, and the planet's going to pass at a distance of about 14 million miles. So we're totally safe from the moons. And gravel contains, pea-sized rocks, larger rocks, and even an occasional something maybe the size of a Volkswagen bus. However, if you get hit by one of those, you won't have to worry about it.
Yeah. When do you predict it's coming through?
Well, you know, celestial mechanics is something I've read a lot about, and there's so much to it, and there's so much that even people at NASA don't understand yet. It's one thing to send a rocket from point A to point B with all the things changing, but this planet complex is come past the sun, and it's trying to push against the Earth, against Venus, and against another big rock that's also in the Earth's actual same orbit. It usually is on the other side of the sun, so we don't see it. But NASA has been out and investigated it before. And these three bodies are in front of planet Nibiru, which has to basically go around or push these out of the way. Venus and this Earth's dark twin will go out of the way first, and then as it pushes past the Earth, it'll come as close as 14 million miles. Now, how long it's going to take to do this is something you'd kind of have to guess at it. I'm looking at the new Madrid fault line adjusting sometime the end of this year, the first of next year, and shortly after that, I'd say within 6 months, I can't see it staying any longer. It's going to push past and go out. Now, at that point, we'll have Richter 9 earthquakes, but worldwide. We'll have high winds, but no higher than a normal hurricane. And we'll have a lot of ocean sloshing, which is going to be just, you know, H-E-double-L for the coastal cities, you know, because it's like a waiter carrying a bowl of soup, you know. If you're a little bit too fast or too slow, the soup spills on the floor. And that's what the oceans will do when the actual Earth is churning, see, because the Atlantic is magnetic. It will follow planet Nibiru as it goes past us. And then as it goes away, the core of the Earth will stop, but the crust, being not really attached to the core, will turn another 90 degrees. And so you'll most likely have Brazil as the new North Pole.
Okay. Terry, I want to thank you for the call. We have to move along, and we do have a break coming up here pretty quick. So let me give the telephone number out again, ladies and gentlemen. During this break, if you have a question or a comment, here is one of those astronomers that NASA says have never reported seeing Nibiru. And you're hearing it tonight. He is reporting it and even tried to report it to NASA. But and he told us about others, maybe as many as 100 more that he knows of, who have tried to report seeing this Planet X or Nibiru. And he told you what happens to them. So NASA knows they don't listen to them, and then they come tell you these guys didn't report it. Yeah, that's a cult. Yeah, that's a cult. Big organization with lots of secrets. It's a cult. All right, we're going to take a break, and we shall return right after this break.
I just listened to Kevin Smith's show, and my IQ jumped 20 points.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Conrad Zydervelt. And if you joined the show late, you may not have heard me announce that, you know, NASA does a big number on one page, well, many pages, trying to disprove Planet X, trying to, which means 10th planet. X is the Roman numeral 10. It means the 10th planet. And so they do this big number, big song and dance, saying that people that talk about Nibiru, it's all part of a cult. And, you know, as I said, I happen to actually be an expert on cults, for real. And a cult is a group that has secret knowledge, stuff they're keeping secret and hiding. That would be you, NASA. So they do that, and then right there on their website, you will find that they have a page where they announce the finding of the 10th planet. That is Planet X. It says 10th planet discovered. 10X, Roman numeral X. They say that the amateur astronomers, that not one of these 100,000 or more amateur astronomers that are watching the skies constantly, not one has reported seeing Nibiru or any other rogue object. And I made a point of saying, NASA, you know that people who talk about Nibiru do not call it a rogue object. They call it a planet that's in our solar system. And you know that. And so we've been talking about how NASA obfuscates and puts up all of this smoke screen. And yet right there on their own website, they announced that, as a matter of fact, the 10th planet has been found. Okay? And they say these amateur astronomers, not one of them has reported it. Well, we've got an amateur astronomer who has, who's photographed it, who tried to report it to NASA, talked about 100 or so other amateur astronomers who have reported it to NASA as well. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. And let's go to the telephone. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin, California.
I'm sorry, Charles, you said?
Chuck.
Chuck. Yes. Okay, Chuck. I know who you are, Chuck. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear you. I have something to ask you that's directly related. Last year, in February of 2011, there was something blocking the lower half of the moon on about February 14th or 15th. The right side of the moon was visible, but the lower half was shaded like there was an object in front of it blocking the sun from hitting it.
Okay, and your question?
Well, I was curious as to whether Conrad or yourself had heard about this. There was a video on YouTube of it also.
I have not, to the best of my knowledge. Conrad, had you heard about this?
What I've noticed about the moon is two things. One is it's being horribly out of position because of whatever's going on in our solar system right now with planet 10. But the other thing is there's been a red glow on the dark portion due to reflected light off the gravel and core of planet X from the sun, which is to the side of the sun. So it shines enough to one side to light up the part of the moon that is close to the dividing line where the light is. So there's been a red glow, and that was noted about that same period of time. I haven't noticed anything that would be in front of it. I can't really imagine what that might be.
Okay. Chuck, does that answer the question for you?
Yes, I did notice the red tint on the dark side of the moon at about the same time also. But yes, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
I mentioned earlier that this article where NASA says that all these astronomers, nobody's ever reported seeing Nibiru. And, of course, we're putting the lie to that tonight. Here is one. You're hearing him tonight. Those who are watching in our members community are seeing him tonight. And we're putting a lie to that statement. Okay, it's absolutely untrue. But in that article, I mentioned they appealed to a theologian who has written some stuff about how Zechariah Sitchin is wrong. Now, what's interesting about that, and Conrad, you may be familiar with this, in this collection of ancient texts that people call the Bible, there is a book called Revelation. And in Revelation, as it is telling about what's going to happen in these climactic, cataclysmic events, at the end of the age, it's not the end of the world, it's the end of the age, is that there's going to be this astronomical body called Wormwood that's going to strike the earth. Okay, so they're appealing to the theologian and even put a link to his article in their article when he says Zechariah Sitchin is wrong. Would they... When it looks like we're about to be struck by some astronomical object and people are talking about wormwood, 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 will they appeal to this same theologian who will be saying, yes, that's wormwood?
That means bitter what?
I bet they won't appeal to him. I bet they will say, well, you know, he's a theologian and he's not a scientist.
Well, you know, the Bible actually, the text speaks really clearly. Wormwood is a term which means bitter poison, which mm-hmm. certainly Chernobyl was, you know, that was called wormwood. But the Bible refers to the tenth planet as wormwood, and it will smite the earth. They use the actual word in the text isn't really hit. Doesn't mm-hmm. mean to hit. It means to affect really badly. And you couldn't get a better description of what happens when a body that's 23 times the mass of the Earth and 1.5 times the gravity pull goes past the Earth. It's going to cause just tremendous, tremendous upset. You know, and the quickest way, the best way to start to get a handle on that is to look up a document called the Safe Locations Document. A copy of it is posted on the front page of the poleshift.ning.com website. Go there, click on Safe Locations, and look up your town or your city and see where you're located compared to where, if that's where you want to be or someplace else is where you need to be, because that one document will save the most amount of lives of anything that I could recommend. Once you have the Safe Locations in your mind, the rest of it will start to fall in place. This is not, of course, the end of the world. It's not something that's so catastrophic it can't be survived. It's a normal part of our solar system's mechanics. It's no different than Mars passing around or any of the other planets. It's just that this orbit passes close enough at one point that it causes or can cause a pole shift on the Earth. And this time, because of the distance it will pass, will definitely have a pole shift, which will cause a lot of trauma. But what it will cause is pretty well known. And if you do a little research from the Safe Locations document and the information that's right around it, I think you'll be able to see what you need to do to be safe and prepare. And it's a time when love will be the most important factor for your family, for your neighbors, and for your actions.
Now, this Safe Locations, is that just from the point of view of North America, or is it worldwide?
No, it's worldwide. It's all the major countries, the major locations, and every area is covered, or one area in every locations that would be the same for the areas right around it. So every state, most major cities in the United States, North and South America, Europe and Asia, Russia, China, it's all pretty much covered in that one document. It's very thorough, very, very well written.
So would you consider yourself, I will get email after this because we've talked about cataclysms, I will get email where people say, Well, you know, Conrad seemed like a nice guy, but, you know, he's a fear-mongerer. Are you a fear-mongerer?
No, that's the old doom and gloom. It's the first thing that's thrown at you as a futurist. You know, if you say there's a storm off of South America and the top of it, and it's headed this direction, I think it's going to hit Texas. That's fear-mongering. That's gloom and doom. But you could be a weatherman, you know, mm-hmm. with some pretty good information.
Yeah.
So you don't know everything that's going to happen, and you don't know how severe things are going to be in the exact time frame. But you can take a pretty good estimated guess because of celestial mechanics and what effect it would have. And we also have the last three pole shifts in our written history. It's not like they're a mystery. Three times ago was 11,200 years ago, and that was the Great Flood. And what happened was a large piece of ice broke off the South Pole at the time, settled into the ocean, which caused a tsunami that kept coming for weeks and actually months. And it went over up through the Suez Canal area and over into the Mediterranean. And because of the pole shift at the time, it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, the text says anyway. I'm sure it rained a lot. And it was a long time before that boat that Noah was in settled on any land. Now, that didn't flood the entire world. There were lots of other humans on the planet at the time that survived in different other continents and areas. But, you know, there were people knocking on the ark saying, you know, you told us and we didn't believe you, and now we'd like to get in.
Yeah, too late. No way to get in. Yeah. All right. Let me give the telephone number out again. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or a comment, here's the telephone number, 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. This is not someone theorizing about does Nibiru exist. This is somebody that's telling you, hey, I have seen it. And you can see it too. And he has told us how to go out and look up and see it. If you are an amateur astronomer, and I know we have a number of amateur astronomers in our audience, this audience is all around the world. You're listening right now, and you got to ask yourself, why aren't you calling? What are you scared of? What are you afraid of? First of all, grab some courage, get a spine, and then hit your phone. 623-444-5889. Are you afraid of NASA? Is that what you're afraid of? 623-444-5889. If you're afraid to pick up your phone, shame on you for looking through your telescope. If you're not willing to tell the people what you see, shame on you for looking through your telescope. We'll be back right after this break, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Conrad Zeiderfeld. He is an amateur astronomer. He is an engineer and inventor as well, but we're talking about amateur astronomy, or we're talking about astronomy this evening. And we have a caller online, so Conrad, let's go straight to the line. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, hi Kevin. Hi Conrad. This is Victoria from Washington.
Hello, Victoria.
And I was listening to you earlier, and the audio broke up, and then the thing went dead just when you were saying something I really wanted to hear. But
okay.
I have a friend who is a professional photographer. And I would say somewhere between three, maybe 4 years ago, somewhere in there, she would like to go to the top of this mountain and I live in northwestern Washington on the Juan de Fuca Strait. So we go up to the top of this mountaintop and look west, and she loved to take sunset photography. And so this particular time I went with her, and it wasn't for quite a while that I finally saw the pictures that she had taken. You know, she waited to develop them, and when she finally got them back, there was a picture of the sun. Now, it was just almost at sunset, and you know, kind of sinking down across the water. And there were two suns. There was a big sun, and to the right of it, looking west, was a smaller sun. And there were reflections coming across the water. The water was basically smooth, you know, fairly smooth, not real choppy or wavy or windy or anything. And you could see both reflections, and they were separated. Now, you said something about some kind of an effect that can be caused by a camera and two lenses or something, but the audio broke up. But I was when I finally saw that picture, I said, that's Nibiru. And I had been hearing of stories about Planet X and Nibiru coming in, and that you could see it close to the sun, but you had to see it at sunset. And I think we actually saw it, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yes, absolutely. That's a true capture, and the way you know is because of the second reflection in the water. You see, if it was a sun dog, which is what you referred to as a sun sets, it'll sometimes make on either side of the sun an extra little light spot with the horizon. Those are called sun dogs. But what you saw is clearly a capture of Nibiru. And as the sun goes down, sometimes you can see still Nibiru in the sky afterwards. It depends which way the light's coming, because anything that's close to the sun, which it probably was closer at that time, the light bends. That's why the sun looks bigger at sunset, and so does Nibiru. The true size of Nibiru is larger to your eye as well as the sun, but it's focused, and the image is brought towards you. Now we're seeing that, and we're also seeing the images from the moons. So sometimes you see four or five moons on top of the sun or to the left of the sun, and you see on certain days that you can see Nibiru also, which means the light is reflecting off of the gravel cloud that surrounds it. And then that's focused towards the earth. The ancient texts say that people that were on the earth at the time, called the Anunnaki, were mining gold, which they needed for their atmosphere. And Nibiru, being mostly away from the sun and in the middle, it uses that gold to flake very finely and put in its atmosphere to reflect what light is generated from the planet itself, because it's a very volcanic planet. And it stays warm by its atmosphere. So that's some of the so the history. But that was a true capture, and you're very lucky to have it. I would see if you can get a copy of that picture to keep for yourself, because that's
She's retired now, and she gave her photography business. You know, she sold it, but I'm gonna contact her and see if she can, you know, find that, because that sounds like a really valuable photo. And I just think, hot diggity dog, I saw Nibiru. And I live to tell the story.
You got to go with you when you took the pictures. That was quite awesome.
And thank you for confirming that for me, because it was like always a big question in my mind whether it was some kind of lens effect or whether it was what looked like a sun. But with the two reflections, and that there was a separation, they didn't like blend together. They were two distinct suns coming down right at the edge of the water, at the horizon. And so I'm just so excited about that. Thank you so much. You have a good evening.
All right. Thanks for the call. Very quickly, because we're almost out of time, we have a flash message from the UK from Mike. And he says, I've heard the UK will be wiped out at pole shift. Is that really likely?
Well, we're in a period right now which we're calling the 7 of 10. If 10 is the pole shift, we're in a period of time approaching it, and during this there's 10 things there. It's on that website, I'll say it one more time, is poleshift.ning.com, and it explains what will happen during the 7 of 10, and there's 10 different things that happen during this pole shift. What are they asking specifically in the flash?
He's heard that the UK will be wiped out.
Yeah, there's a European tsunami, which now they're downgrading to be not quite as high a tsunami wave as they first thought. But when the Atlantic adjusts, just after the New Madrid fault line adjusts down our Mississippi River, which will be a series of 5 and 6 Richter earthquakes, each town will probably adjust by itself. It'll be a ripple effect. But the buildings are all brick masonry down there, so there'll be a lot of destruction of buildings. But as that happens, immediately after, the Atlantic Ocean will adjust. And at that time, a tsunami, because of the way the currents go, will go over towards Europe. And a wave of some 100 foot tall or so will hit Ireland and the UK. And this is before the pole shift. This is during the 7 of 10, which is some 6 to 8 month time period we're in right now.
All right. Outstanding. We are almost out of time, and Conrad, I want to thank you for being willing to come on and talk with us about this evening. And in fact, folks, all we've done here is NASA said one thing and we're saying something else. They said that amateur astronomers have never seen it. Well, this evening, Conrad has proved to you that's not the case. And he's talked to you about what amateur astronomers have seen and how they've tried to report it, and they get rebuffed. NASA's doing disinfo. Now, does that mean I believe in Nibiru? I'll say it again. No, I don't believe in Nibiru. I don't believe in doorknobs either. Either it exists or it doesn't. Okay? It's that simple. Either it exists or it does not exist. It's that simple. I'm not an astronomer. I'm not an amateur astronomer. Amateur astronomers are telling us they have seen it. Amateur astronomers are the only way you're going to get any information. NASA is a cult of silence on these kinds of things. When they accuse everybody else of being a cult, well, they are the ones keeping secrets. Doesn't that make them the cult? It's time for me to say that my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.